Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that vocal shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome into the latest edition. I'm Pat Growlin, Paul Danger Jr., and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you on a day after the Bengals beat the Kansas City Chiefs 27-24, moved to 8-4 on the year. There is lots to unpack. This is our Bengals Lunchtime Live Room. It's back, Jay. It's back.
It feels like it's been a long time. Yesterday felt like a long time since we had been at Paycor Stadium. But yes, it's good to be back. I really like doing these and hearing from everybody that drops in and ask us questions, which I'm sure you guys have many.
Yes, this is one of those days where I know fans do this. I like to do this. And this is the case after consequential losses too, but specifically after consequential wins. It's so interesting sifting through everything the next morning. I find myself, you know, reaching noon and being like, oh, I haven't even gotten started on any of my work because I've just been kind of diving and trying to sift through the rubble of everything and figure out, you know, where to go next and what it all means. And there's so much great content across our site, across other sites, and so many people that do good things. It's really been an interesting morning, and there's a lot to unpack with these Bengals right now. There is certainly no doubt about that. You guys have questions that you would like to ask, just put your name and request to speak up there and hop in the queue, and we will call on you. If you just want to drop some questions into the chat, you can do that. So we would love to see you drop some, or just comments. Tell us what we're wrong about. We're used to hearing that. Anything you want to drop in there. And we'll try to address what we can. We'll be back with our regular podcast tomorrow on Tuesday. And then on Thursday, we will have the, of course, our preview edition for the Browns game coming up next week, a big one, back in division against, you know, they go from the team that they only beat to the team that they can't beat, Jay.
And it's totally reversed from what you would expect it to be.
Yeah, it is. Nobody certainly expects that. Oh, yeah. No problem with Patrick Mahomes. It's those pesky Browns that are constantly getting underneath the Bengals' skins. But we'll plenty to get to with all of that stuff. So the Athletic Football Show, if that's not one of your regular listens, it really should be. In particular, because of late, it's become sort of just a Bengals stan show. Like the first 20 minutes of three of their last four episodes have just been essentially them fawning all over the Bengals and their evolution offensively and discussing how they're playing, the nature in which they're winning, creating such sustainability and being so drastically different from the way they were winning last year, not discrediting the way they were winning last year, but pointing out this is such a stronger foundation that they have built specifically offensively in the way that they've evolved this year. You, of course, heard us talk a lot about that. Nate and Robert, two of the smartest minds in our business, and it's been fun to listen to them. Today's episode, I'm particularly going to give a shout. About the first 20 minutes is all of that. So highly recommend giving them a listen too. Jay, we need to get, I think Nate might need to be a future guest on our show here very soon. Cause he is in love with, the moves the Bengals coaching staff have done offensively and the way that they are playing.
Yeah, I would love to have him on. And I know a lot of people are busy. They have their jobs, their families. And sometimes it's hard to listen to a bunch of podcasts, but would recommend adding that one to your rotation. And if you're not able to, then maybe we can at least give them a little flavor of it by having Nate on.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they do a great job over there. Highly recommend putting it in there. Let's all right, let's dive in. Let's go questions. I see some stuff in the chat already. I'll go over to the queue and we'll start right out at the top. And remember, unmute your line when you come up if you feel like you're not hearing us. That's usually what the issue is. All right, Robert E., let's bring you up onto the stage. Robert, how are you doing?
Hello, doing well, guys. How are you?
Awesome.
Doing good.
Okay, yeah, you can still hear me?
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. Sounds great.
Last night was crazy. I'm sure you can hear how hoarse my voice is. I've got a gnarly headache. I don't really have a question. I just wanted to come in and talk, you know, about hindsight and the cycle of the season. I was in this live room previously, and I was talking about, you know, divisional tiebreakers and what that might look like for the team to possibly win the division. And at the time, I thought, like, the only way they're making the playoffs is they can win the division, you know, but they're 0-2 in the division. After that, you know, that was after they got beat down by the Browns. Mm-hmm. You know, and you have that Browns loss. You have that sandwich between the two blowouts of the Falcons and the Panthers, and then you go to the Steelers. You know, Kenny Pickett puts up 30. You know, but you know they're just, you know, but through all that, you know, they're stacking wins, they're getting better. People missing time, and then all of a sudden you blink and you look at, they got two wins over two of the top teams in the conference, and they're in stone's throw of the one seed. So, you know, I don't want to overlook, you know, the Browns, Bucks, Patriots, but, you know, they're kind of struggling. And but if they keep playing like this, you know, keep streaking, stacking these wins, you know, the season's gonna be punctuated by two big games to the Bills and Ravens, you know, and that's just what I envision this year, you know, with the, you know, in the future with Joe Burrow. And even though it's hard to make the Super Bowls, it's just so fun to be competitive and be watching these great games. So that's a long, very long winded to say that just wanted to talk about how much has changed since last time I was here and just how quickly it feels like it's just been snap of a finger and the season's like turned around. So
no, that's a great point, Robert. And I appreciate you dropping back in on us. The stark difference between the last live room Jay after that Monday nighter against Cleveland, you know, I do look back on that. I mean, it's the last time they lost. I do look back on that, and it did feel very dark after that game. You had the Cheeto injury that they were fresh off of. You had all the concerns of what they were going to do without Chase. This, I think what Robert said is correct, Jay, and that's they got to this point that you expected them to be at right now. This is where I think before the season started, you assumed the Bengals would be on December 5th. It's just the challenging, circuitous route they had to go through to get here has been, you know, the sort of nauseating roller coaster we've referenced along the way this season has been the surprise. But it's really not that surprising. It's just when you experience it in the life of high expectations, it sometimes feels that way. But the bottom line is the great teams, the ones that are meant to try to make runs, they do position themselves where by the time they reach this point in the season, they're becoming who they were supposed to be then. And that's what you feel when you talk around the locker room, when you talk to people off the record internally in the organization, is that they do seem to have, it took time, but they got to where everything they expected to be at this point.
Yeah, it took time and they got to where they expected to be. But honestly, if they are ahead of where they were last year, it's almost a carbon copy of last year where they kind of find their footing and take off, and they're getting an earlier start on that this year, even than they did last year. It was more mid-December when you saw this really kind of click last year. And what he said, what Robert said about the snap of the finger, it was 2, maybe 3 weeks ago on the AFC North whip around, we were breaking down the race and I predicted the Ravens would win the division by 3 games. And I'm not too proud to admit I was totally wrong. And it's not because I didn't think the Bengals were capable of this. I thought the Ravens had such a cushy schedule. They're just going to boat race the rest of this division. And that is not happening at all. And he's right that the division is in play. The number one seeded, everything is in play for this team right now. And it's crazy to think that the I don't know if you want to say the biggest, but maybe the most curious stumbling block in front of them is a bad Browns team coming up this Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the AFC North race, it's partially who you play, and that was part of the setup, you know, of why it seemed that the Ravens had such a significant advantage. Football Outsiders today has the Ravens at 53% to win the division and the Bengals at 44%. That schedule still plays, and that's with a slight correction made for an assumption that Lamar Jackson will miss this weekend's game for them in Pittsburgh. But you know, it's how you play. It's how you're playing, right? It's the, what they're yelling, Mark Duffner again yesterday, they got to play us, right? I think we're going to hear that after every single game in the post game speech at this point, from Duff, who might lose his voice just from yelling that, every single week. But you know, I think it is, it's how you're playing. And that's what the Bengals are proving right now. Is so the schedule's up out, they, when you feel like you're the best team in football, it shouldn't matter who you play. All right, let's, with so many questions, so many people in here. Thank you to everybody that has come in and is listening and dropping stuff in the chat. We're going to do our best to try to crank through it, even though I am insanely long-winded and can't stop myself from talking. I apologize. Alexander N., let's bring you up onto the stage. Alexander, what's going on?
Are you guys down to hear a really disgusting good luck charm that has kind of evolved at my house? And swearing, okay.
Insanely nervous about that setup, Alexander. Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you.
Good. So it starts
with
the divisional round against the Titans, okay? I'm super sick with the flu, and for the first time in my adult life, only time in my adult life, I shit my pants, all right?
Oh, no.
And we know how that went.
Please tell me they're not hanging up.
No. And then, the AFC Championship game, my newborn has a massive blowout diaper. It gets all over my Jamar Chase jersey. We know how that goes. Yesterday, my potty training 3-year-old shits his pants. And he just happens to be wearing a Joe Mixon jersey. And we know how that went. So it's not necessary, but in my house, if somebody shits their pants wearing the Bengals jersey, they are going to win. I cannot explain this.
Well, your game day meal should be Jaeger and Skyline for the rest of the season.
Don't wish that on me, but I mean, I'll take one for the team if I need to.
Wow, this could be the invention of the Bengals jersey diapers that you'll just have to have, you know, the kids will have to wear every Sunday, I guess, as they, you know, take, maybe, does it have to be a current jersey? Could you take like an old Carson Palmer or something like that that you have stashed in the back and just start wrapping them with it on Sundays and just wait for it to happen?
I got plenty. I got Delta O'Neal. I got Perfect. I got Duque hanging up somewhere.
There you go. Send all your old Bengals jerseys to Alexander N.
He's putting them to good use, apparently. I don't want anybody knowing my real name or address with this story.
Well, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you sharing. It was very bold to come on and instantly open with a crap in your pants story.
Oh yeah, man.
You are an incredible man. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, right. Alexander.
We're off to a good start, Jay. We are rolling now.
Where do we go from there?
I gotta say, I not quite see that one coming.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
We'll go next and bring Aaron B. up onto the stage. Aaron, what's going on?
Hear me?
Hey, yes.
There we go. Hey, not much. So in response to the previous talker, I'm a home health occupational therapist, and you are never potty trained in life. It's just the frequency changes and it will come back eventually. And more people.
I'm glad that's the direction this live room has gone now. Does everyone have to make some reference to this along the way? I hope not. I hope eventually we can move forward, but I appreciate the help. I appreciate the perspective. We all needed it. Aaron, what do you got?
Jay, my question is for you as an Ohio State fan. Do you ever sit back and just kind of be amazed that this is Joe Burrow, who was the third string quarterback at Ohio State? I know I remember I was terrified that Urban was going to go with Joe Burrow and run him up the middle 50 times a game. And we weren't going to have Dwayne Haskins. And the other, I have another question is just, do you guys have any idea on what the vibe is with Mike to have this team? Is he like super happy? Is he like, this was my plan, you know, all along? I just wondered at like how Mike is holding up.
Well, I'm sure Mike is loving this run. As you know, we don't get to hear from him but once a year. But I'm sure he's ecstatic about this. And even last year, it didn't end the way they wanted. But that had to be very validating to make that run and get to a Super Bowl for the first time with him in charge. As far as the Burrow thing, I'm a big Ohio State fan and I root for him. I don't follow the recruiting and all that. I really wasn't that aware of Joe Burrow when he was at Ohio State. And my son was at Ohio University and I went down there, and as dads do, I took him shopping at Walmart to get a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, why in the hell are there all these LSU jerseys for sale in Athens, Ohio? And it wasn't just Burrow, it was Foster Moreau and all these others. And I took a picture of it and I sent it to Kat Terrell, who covered the Bengals for a while for ESPN, is back at ESPN covering the Saints. And it just, I never put it together. I didn't realize the whole trajectory of Joe Burrow until he started that amazing season at LSU. So it'd be really hard for me to go back and say what my thoughts were about Joe Burrow's usage at Ohio State, because it just wasn't even on my radar. And I guess that probably makes me a bad fan, but busy with other teams, let's put it that way.
I will say this about Mike real quick, and I've sort of come across him a couple of times. I think I rode a cart with him at one point early in the year, but again, not long conversations and talking to people that are around him. I mean, look, if the Bengals win, Bengals are doing well, Mike's very happy. And he doesn't, you know, in general, and knowing him for a little while, how much I do feel like he doesn't get caught up in the, this was my plan all along. He's very much into, let's make the best decisions every day. Let's, you know, have patience. Let's look to the future and see what that looks. I mean, I don't think it's like some grand vindication for him. I think he just appreciates a team that's winning and a city that is back behind the team again and everything that's kind of created here. That's my perspective. Again, I look forward to talking to him again soon in the near future and bringing that to you guys, because his perspective certainly is interesting when you consider, you know, where this franchise has been. Let's go next and bring Brian B up onto the stage. Brian, what's going on?
Awesome. So I have a little question regarding playoff standings or seeding, I guess, rather, and a little imagine if you will. Paul, since you'd like to do that. Obviously, we don't want to overlook the Browns because they've had our number. And then obviously, we still need to beat the Bucks. And the Patriots, but imagine if you will going or having Buffalo come here, possibly pulling that game off, and then the last game of the season with the Baltimore Ravens, possibly for the division, but also the number one seed. I just want to get you guys' thoughts on that.
I mean, I don't think it's out of the question. I don't know, about running the table seems a bit lofty. This is the first time they've ever won four in a row under Zach, so. You figure there's a stumble somewhere. It cannot be this week against Cleveland again. If they fall to 1-4 in the division, and Baltimore wins this week, I mean, you can pretty much bank on them being a wild card at best and going on the road in the first round of the playoffs. And if your scenario does play out, and that game in Week 18 is for the number one seed, I could easily see that being the game that gets flexed into the night. They like the win or go home aspect when they flex that final season. And I don't know that would be the case there. It would probably be win or go on the road as a wild card, but there's not, it, just the way it's shaping up, there's not a lot of really intriguing matchups in Week 18. And I think Bengals Ravens might be a front runner for that flex spot.
Yeah, I would definitely would be a front runner for the flex spot. If the Bengals are up one game, if it's even, that will be a division winner game. I mean, that's what it will be. You know, that division tie break could come into play, But that's really in a scenario where both teams kind of tank a bit down the stretch, because the Ravens would have to then would have to lose three division games. They're 2-0. That would include one to Cincinnati, and then you'd have to, you know, probably see them lose the next two here, Cleveland, and so the Bengals have to win to get to 3-3. So that at that point, you know, the Ravens have what, 7 losses? Then at that point, they're 10-7. The Bengals would have really chunked this next stretch. To end up in a tie where we're talking about that, you know, there's a possibility that if you just look at how those two teams specifically are playing right now, and again, you can't take the schedule out of it, but you know, at this point, when you have now the downturn that we've seen lately from New England and from Brady and Tampa Bay a little bit, the schedule looks a little bit more even than it previously did. I mean, yesterday was a big one. You had that is the AFC West bottom versus the top difference. And to come out both with wins was really what you thought the biggest advantage was for Baltimore. And the Bengals kind of countered that. So it's going to be a matter of there's a chance the Bengals could get two clear by the time that one comes. If you look at how teams are playing now, what happens to Lamar Jackson's injury. And then at that point, you are talking about the number one seed, right? I mean, you're talking about tiebreakers, one back of teams that you've beaten Kansas City. In theory, to do this, you're going to have to beat Buffalo, but you get them into your house on Monday Night Football. You have tiebreakers. You have tiebreakers on all these teams. Tennessee, you've beaten all these teams. Tennessee, the 4 seed right now at 7-5. Kansas City's the 2 seed at 9-3. Theoretically, you would have beaten Buffalo at 9-3. You can get there. So it's not like it's an impossible thing. Kansas City's schedule is weak. They should win a lot of games, but the Bengals, the way they're playing right now, have to feel the same. It would be a hell of a chase, man. It would be a hell of a chase down, but with the breakers now, there's a chance that number one seed is something they could get to. Football Outsiders has that at 9.3% right now, based on their Dave formula and their weighted DVOA. All right, let's go next and bring Will Porter up onto the stage. Will, how are we doing?
I'm doing well. I don't know why my whole name still shows up on this thing.
Oh, yeah, you're supposed to be Will P. What's happening? You're exposed.
I don't know. Nobody tried to look me up.
Crap in your pants.
Nope, not going to talk about that. I want to talk about interior line play. Last three games, you faced Cam Hayward, Jeffrey Simmons, and Chris Jones. And Bolson allowed one sack, one QB hit, and two hurries. For one, that's awesome. With him and Karras and Kappa, it's like night and day versus last year. So it's been awesome to watch those guys develop. Excuse me. And like really gel. And the way that the pocket that Burrow is operating in is really unleashed. Like, I think he should definitely be in the MVP conversation. Like, we knew this was possible, but now it's like, it's ridiculous seeing him operate in a clean pocket. So in the immediate term, it's like looking at how much better the interior blocking has been and what that has unlocked for the offense, but also kind of at the macro level, it's nice that the Bengals finally hit on a drafting lineman for the first time in what feels like a decade. So just one of your thoughts on interior line play.
Well, thank you for that. Covering this team, I do feel like I am a expert on interior line play, just because it's discussed more than maybe any this topic on all 32 NFL teams. I mean, Bengals fans, notably, understandably, frustratingly, have been so angry with that issue. I mean, it's been forever, right? I mean, since you mentioned it, they've hit. I mean, you got to go back to Zeitler. Since you talk about a really an offensive line pick that really, really worked out. But what you have happening now, you know, what they did this offseason, this was it. I mean, this was why. And when you know, we talk about Robert and Nate talking about sustainability, so much of that is exactly what you're talking about, is those three guys in particular creating those clean pockets, holding that middle for the most part. And man, Cordell Volson, you know, playing so well as a rookie, all of those guys together is what creates sustainability. It's what allows Burrow to be efficient. It's what allows him to not just have, you know, time to throw. I mean, there were some of those plays yesterday where it's like 2, 3, 4, you're counting, and he almost can't believe it. You see him looking side to side and be like, no, I'll just stay, you know, and end up in the 4 or 5 second range almost on some of those, it seemed like. And not just that, though. It's the fact that them winning at such a high rate, even when one breaks down, there's still lanes open for him to do what he does so well. Sneak out, extend the play, find the check down, or run it himself, or whatever that is. It really unlocks him. There's no question about it. And that has been the difference. And, you know, those guys are signed. And they're in their 20s. That is sustainability going forward. That is sustainability now. And it makes everything feel so much safer and with your franchise quarterback for the long run when you know that you have that in place.
Yeah, and it feels like we knew that it was going to get better. I mean, just Ted Karras, Alex Kappa's track record was too good. It was just going to be a matter of them coming together as a group. And the big question was Cordell Volson. And it did get off to a bit of a rough start, but just the way he's grown and kind of been taken under the wing by those veterans, that has been a really, really nice surprise for this team. And, you know, Paul talked about it. Joe Burrow is so good off script and on the run. But he's just, if he can just stand in there, he's so lethal. And he's talked about it. You saw it on that 3rd and 11 yesterday. If it's a guy coming off the edge and he sees him, he feels like he can, number one, make him miss if he has to. And if he doesn't, he will stand in there and take the hit and still deliver a great pass. It's when that pressure comes up the middle and forces him out of the pocket and to get on the run, even though he does make a lot of plays that way. That's not ideal. That's not the way they want to live. And they've been able to get away from that, where he's constantly running and trying to look down the field and make things happen spur of the moment. You just let him sit back in the pocket like you saw yesterday. I mean, that was a great example. That's not the best defense in the league, but it's a very good team with a good defense. And if you give Joe Burrow that kind of time, you're just going to keep seeing more performances like that.
I don't want to spend too much time going back into 3rd and 11 here, because we did talk about it a lot in the walkout yesterday. And it should be talked about. I mean, honestly, I sat down after we got done with the walkout, Jay, and I said to you, I was like, God, I have so much great stuff about all these hustle plays and the sort of championship fabric stuff that developed. And I feel like I just want to write 1500 words on 3rd and 11 here, because there's so much to it. It was so good. It was such a quintessential Joe Burrow, why he's so good play. I was waiting, and I'm so glad the all 22 of the end zone came out. It's the one that I wanted to see. And I was kind of waiting on it. They never showed it, at least not that I saw on the broadcast. I mean, that angle shows you everything. The amount of muck in front of him, and what Joe is looking at with, really, he has a spy linebacker who looks strictly dedicated to knocking a pass down, which we've seen how many times? You know, the most batted down quarterback in the league. He has the undercrosser guy who he's basically throwing just over and behind his head, and then getting hit by Dana, who is coming right up under his chin and would have driven him to the ground if it wasn't for him being hit into Jonah Williams and Chris Jones, who was already in his lap on the other side, and then dropping it over top of all of them into T. Higgins, who had 0.5 yards of separation against Joshua Williams, and making that contested catch. That call, that throw, that poise, that holding the ball, that accuracy, that moment, ridiculous. It is a ridiculous Burrow throw, one of the great throws I've ever seen him make, and I hope it gets the amount of run that it deserves. It seems that it will, and it should, but it is that cold-blooded killer instinct stuff. That is just stupid good. If you haven't seen the end zone all 22 I highly recommend going and checking that out. All right. I'm going to not ramble on too much more. So many people have questions. Everybody's here. Thank you so much for coming in. It's great to see so many people in the live room. Let's go bring John O up onto the stage. John, what's going on?
I want to talk about the running back room here a little bit. I was surprised to see Mixon not play yesterday. I'm wondering if you guys see anything curious about that. And Joe's apparent trust in Samaje, from my perspective. I mean, it's going to be hard to put that guy on the bench for any period of time, I think. But ultimately, too, where does that leave Chris Evans, Travion Williams? I assume all four won't be up. Curious to get your thoughts on the whole room in general.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know there's anything curious going on with Joe. There, it's just the concussions are so hard to predict, and it is odd for a guy to miss two games with a concussion, especially when he practiced all week. It could be just another one of those things where they held Jamar Chase one more week than just to be cautious. And that Samaje's playing so well, it's just giving Joe Mixon one more week. As far as what happens when Joe does come back, that's a great question, because Samaje is still going to be in there on third down. He's so good at pass pro, and he's so good, as we've seen, as a receiver. I don't know if they would go to the series by series. I mean, Joe Mixon's one of those guys that, and a lot of running backs are, that you just have to kind of keep slamming them up in there and let them develop a rhythm, and then things kind of break. As far as the ripple effect, that's really interesting, because we see Chris Evans scores the game-winning touchdown yesterday. He played two snaps and had the game-winning touchdown. Travion has taken over as the kick returner. And if there's an inactive choice that has to be made when Joe comes back, and they're not going to go with all those guys active, which they could, but I think Chris Evans is the one that goes to the bench at this point if they're only going to ride with three on game day.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of keeping somebody up to for three snaps a game, or one very unique package when you don't really do much of anything else, is probably not gonna happen. And Travion, had that really nice reception in Tennessee. Yeah. I think has shown some growth with his hands as far as doing that type of stuff. He's got speed. I'm with you. Travion is ahead of Chris Evans, and so when that push does come to shove, that would be the direction that I would see that going. The Mixon thing. He was not cleared by the doctors for this game. I mean, they didn't clear him out of the concussion protocol. That's the rare thing. That's the weird thing. It's just so odd. You always see that traditional progression through the protocol during the week, where you go from out to practicing, even in a limited capacity, and eventually at the end of the week, you have to pass the final baseline test to get back. Clear. It appears that's where the problem occurred, and he wasn't able to come back. When he does come back, I know we talked and kind of dove into these numbers last week when that discussion came up. I think it was on the Tuesday pod, Jay, and it was, and people don't realize this, but Mixon, since week six, and they kind of really got everything going, was first in the league in rushing efficiency. He had the five touchdowns. So it wasn't just one game. It wasn't just one game of explosives. I mean, there was a lot of evidence of him playing well. I think the difference is where you'll see P. Ryan come in more, maybe, or have a role expanded, would continue to be those second middles. The second down plays. How much does that package turn into more P. Ryan-centric? When you're throwing it more consistently, you trust him as a running back. And that's such a big thing for Burrow. Story I remember when he came out and talking about just his style of game early on in his career was how much he loved Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because he was just always in the right spot. If he was going out to the check down, he would run it exactly the same way. He'd be right there. And I think that reliability and trust that you've seen is why Burrow has had so much success finding that with P. Ryan, whether it be the checkdowns, whether it be that stuff when he's scrambling. There's just, it always seems to go smoothly in that nature. And I'm not saying that it doesn't with Mixon, but there does seem to be a little bit more trust in that area. And that's where I think if you're talking about a percentage of snaps, the sense that I got is that's what you'd be looking at, is that's maybe where things would change. I wouldn't see some sort of base down that would change. I mean, Mixon's still crazy dynamic as a rusher. He can still bring you an explosion that P. Ryan just can't. P. Ryan brings you a lot, man. And that stiff arm is going to be going to continue to be shown two straight weeks. And he's a bully. And that, and his pass pro is fantastic. But, you know, I do think the explosiveness as a base down back, I think still think belongs to Mixon when he comes back. But it's great to know that you have the other guy there in this league now. You got to have both. I mean, you just you got to have more than one running back anymore. And the Bengals are lucky to have that.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
Let's go next to Ben D and bring Ben up on the stage. What's going on?
Hey, guys, you got me okay?
Sure yes. Do. How's it going?
Not too bad. I want to talk about the defense a little bit. Paul, you talked on the walkout about like the hustle plays and Jermaine Pratt and kind of the linebacking core a little bit. Obviously, the defensive line made Patrick Mahomes' life pretty difficult, especially at the end of the game there. But I want to hear your thoughts about the secondary, because obviously, you know, keeping him in the pocket, part of that is on the secondary, but also there were plenty of like big chunk plays down the field all day yesterday. So I'm wondering how you see that holding up. Oh, sorry. I wonder how you see that like holding up as we see, you know, bigger, you know, receivers coming down the line with Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis for the Bills, and even, you know, Amari Cooper next week with a much better quarterback than he had on the Monday night game.
Sure. No, I appreciate the question, Ben. You know, I was most interested on Sunday to see how the corners and how the secondary held up. It felt like it was the first real challenge against a real dude for them, you know, arguably all year outside of a few minor spots. And, you know, I thought they held up well. I mean, look, Mahomes is going to get some now. I mean, and he threw those up against blitzes, the two biggest chunks in particular, you know, the MVS deep balls. They were contested. And I grant they were great contested plays, and there were guys open occasionally, but a lot of that was kind of, you know, some Anarumo aggressiveness. But as a whole, you know, I thought for the most part they did a decent job of holding them down. You know, the one thing was we talked about, I wrote about Cam Taylor-Britt in great detail last week. Mo had the Cam Taylor-Britt game sign on the on the podcast. I did not hardly notice him, and that is the greatest compliment I can offer, is that they weren't picking on him. He wasn't exposed. He was in the right spots. You know, it wasn't a thing where, oh, there's a second round rookie out there who's just getting lit up and they're working stuff against him. It never felt like that in the slightest. And I think that is a massive deal, how he came out of this game. And I don't know. I don't think the PFF grades are even out yet. I don't know what they're going to say. I'll be curious to talk to Lou a little bit more about what he thought about how he played. But, you know, the fact that he seemed to really hold his own and not be a liability against Patrick Mahomes in that offense, I thought was a huge deal for what this team can still be the rest of the season.
Yeah, just how much Lou blitzed in that game. You don't blitz Patrick Mahomes just like you don't blitz Joe Burrow, and he did. He came after him. That shows an incredible amount of faith and trust in CTB in particular, in that whole secondary overall. And, I mean, do you realize how close Mo was to being right, to us calling this the Cam Taylor-Britt game? I mean, yeah. Patrick Mahomes barely breaks the plane of the goal line for that touchdown. Otherwise, that's a forced fumble by Cam Taylor-Britt. Huge play. Then he almost had a pick. And Jesse Bates kind of ran. They were both right there. He had his hands on that ball. But he did. He played really well. And I disagree a little bit that they had the 42 and the 29-yarder where they beat the blitz. And Mahomes is going to get that. They didn't have a pass play over 18 after those two. If you go into a game and you say Patrick Mahomes is going to have two passes of more than 18 yards, you would sign up for that every single day. And this team has had a tendency to have some miscommunication and given up some chunk plays. And I thought they were terrific yesterday. I would, You don't want a 42 and a 29, but if you're zero blitzing, you got to live with that. Again, Patrick Mahomes is going to hit a couple of those. And as you said, Paul, the coverage wasn't bad. It wasn't blown assignments where guys are running wide open. And I think that's part of the reason that Lou took those chances, because Cam Taylor-Britt is such a good tackler, and he had faith that even if Patrick Mahomes was going to hit some of those, they weren't going to turn into touchdowns. The DBs were going to get the guy on the ground, and they were going to live for another series of downs and try to, at worst, force a field goal, and at best, rip the ball out of Travis Kelce's hands and turn him over. And I thought it was a great, great performance by the DBs and a great schematic performance by Lou.
And make sure we mention Eli Apple too, who, yeah, you know, is the same concept. I mean, a guy who was going to be benched, who they were going to play CTV over, and it, certainly we know all the criticism that's been directed at him since that has happened. Since the Cheeto injury, he has played really well, and he has really kind of, you know, stepped into a spot and risen up when they absolutely needed him too. So he's very much a part of that equation too. All right, let's go. We're close to the end. I see Natasha B is here, so we get to hear from Hawaii. That's going to be exciting. Let's try to crank out a few more here real quick and bring Daniel B. You are up with me now. What's going on?
Awesome. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Great. What's going on?
Good. Pretty quick question. You know, before this game, I think there was a string of a couple games where we lost the toss, and just by, I feel like what tends to happen is we got the ball first because the other team deferred. So I guess I was a little surprised to see us still take the ball first, even though that was our track record before those lost coin tosses. Do you think that's a product of, you know, keeping up with Mahomes? You know, it's not like they're a type of team that can get game scripted out because they're always back. But I just wonder, you know, do you think this is just a sticking point for Zach and the team this season, is that they just want to get off on the right foot and kind of, you know, get themselves some positive momentum? Because, you know, I think there's still this inherent value to doubling up at half and then getting the ball. Yeah, sorry, a little too long-winded, but just wanted to get your thoughts on if this is just going to be a trend that continues for the rest of the season and hopefully through the playoffs.
Well, you're right. There is great value in that doubling up. But I think this was a case of, and maybe we can ask Zach about it today, but they had to come from way back the last two times they played the Chiefs. And they knew if they took the ball first, they could go out, set the tone, and kind of change that whole path and get a lead and not have to worry. There's no guarantees. I mean, there could be a turnover. There could be a punt on that first possession. But they probably felt really good about their script. And they should have. It looked great. That for opening drive was just zip, zip right down the field. The other thing that I think is interesting is maybe against a Patrick Mahomes, you're more willing to give up that middle eight double dip, because if the opponent gets the ball first to start the second half, the odds are you're going to have it last. And yeah, things can play out. There's no guarantee of that. But the odds would be in your favor, and I wonder how much of that they were looking at as well.
Feels like a spreadsheet fest to me, Jay. Time to do a little deep dive into what percentage of teams that get the ball first in the third quarter end up having it last at the end of the game. I need these numbers. I'm interested now. You perked my interest.
Gave myself
all
homework.
Right. I do want to thank everybody for coming in here, but we do have to kind of wrap it up. We've got to get our stuff together and get down to the stadium for availabilities with coordinators and coaches and players' day off today. But we still will get a couple of guys on Zoom for you. Plenty of content coming this week, but we have to end it as we always do by going to Hawaii. It's early in the morning and our good friend Natasha B is out here. Natasha, what is going on? How are things in Hawaii?
There's
the sound of the waves that I need to hear.
There you go. Sorry about that. So I guess I just had something to say. I just think tip of the cap to Duke Tobin and his guys. I mean, I feel like this was when the Bengals were supposed to falter, right? No Cheeto, no Jamar, no Joe Mixon. The schedule is getting tough. And they're ascending because guys like CTB, Samaje, Trenton Irwin are stepping in there and making plays. The line looked great yesterday. And I just think this team is really deep and really well constructed, and the drafting and the free agent pickups have been incredible. And I just think that we got to hand it to him. And I also wanted to say that yesterday, Hayden Hurst goes down early, and I feel like the Bengals got a little pettiness to them, and there was Twitter beef, and they wanted him involved. And he went down, and I say this tongue in cheek, but long snapper Mitchell Wilcox is catching passes. So like, it just feels like nothing can stop this team. And even with uncharacteristic penalties and mistakes and injuries, the Bengals beat the Chiefs, and they could have really beat the Chiefs. And it just feels like a great time to be a Bengals fan.
Natasha, you bring the good vibes, as I would expect you to do from the Big Island. Thank you so much. It's a great point. It's great to hear from you. I always look forward to it ending this way. I want to address your comment about Duke Tobin, who would appreciate this. Amazing. You know, when the draft picks stink, right? First call on this live room would be what? They Duke Tobin, his they drafted like crap, right? But when the guys come through consistent, when the next wave, right? So last year we talked a lot about that wave of roster depth that helped them along as the season went by, whether it was, you know, what they got out of Trey Flowers covering tight ends, Clay Johnston, you know, bringing down Henry in Tennessee, any number, you know, draft picks that paid off from last year immediately. You know, we saw that, but you wondered about this. What's the next wave look like? What is this class going to bring? There's so many unprovens sitting there. If you don't continue to pay that off, if those drafts don't continue to bring it, you're exposed. And they have had an opportunity to be exposed in recent weeks. And you're exactly right, Natasha. I mean, they have come through, whether we're talking about the Volson pick, whether we're talking about how CTV has come through, whether we're talking about the free agency spends on the line, you know, Joseph Osai yesterday. I mean, so many of these guys are guys that we haven't seen if those picks would pay off. There were unknowns about the next wave of Bengals football because they, you know, you're certainly going to need that. And those personnel guys continue to hit, continue to find fits that make sense for this team, that fit in with this team stylistically, schematically, and you've seen it pay off in recent weeks. You certainly saw it pay off yesterday, where you had a lot of those guys making an impression in big spots.
Yeah, she mentioned Mitch Wilcox, an undrafted free agent that they brought in and playing valuable snaps now. And yes, he had the catch. And he was the one Paul referenced, that the muck in the middle on 3rd and 11. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't run that route precisely, he is in the way. Or if he sticks his hand up there and possibly deflects it on its way to T. Higgins. So, yeah, he wasn't involved in that play, but credit to him. On running the route as it was directed and leaving that line of sight open for Burrow to make the pass to T. Higgins. It is that early in the year, I felt like this was a Super Bowl caliber starting lineup, which is obvious. They were just coming off of a Super Bowl appearance. And I wasn't so sure it was this overall Super Bowl roster. And again, I've been proven wrong. Every guy that they've called on, whether it be for injury or for other reasons to come in and add more snaps and a bigger role, has really come through from them. And I think that's a great point, Natasha.
And they haven't even had to call on their first round pick. You know, I mean, Dax Hill has just continued to sit around in the background, wondering if anybody ever gets hurt on this team and, you know, and hang out. And so, yeah, that on top of everything else. So certainly more kudos belong to Duke Tobin, Mike Potts, Steve Mrdicevic, entire team over there for you know, what they've been able to do and finding a way to put this team together. And it's like we said when we opened this, they are where I think they thought, where most people thought they should be come this time of year. Now it's a matter of playing out. There's still a long way to go, Jay.
Yes, there is.
It's December 5th, okay? That is – you know, last year we were covering a game 10 weeks from this point. So go ahead and go back 10 weeks from where we are today and what the conversations were and how things were viewed. It's very different. Things can change. But for today, the Bengals are in the top tier of the NFL. They're as much a contender as anybody in the league. And, you know, week to week's pretty fun right now. Like, it's just, they're in a, you're in a series of interesting games, and they're a very interesting team, and their quarterback is just on fire. All right. Thanks to everybody for coming in. This is great to do this again. It's great to see so many people in here, whether it's in the chat, dropping into the questions. We're going to try to keep these going as we're on a more regular schedule for now. And as it's getting later in the year, so keep an eye out for them as we go by. Of course, we'll have the regular podcast tomorrow, our Thursday preview, and then the walkout against Cleveland on Sunday is our schedule. So we hope you will check back in with us. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.